Everyone. It is Thursday, October 17th, and it is 12:10 p.m. And I will call to order the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board of Commissioners regular board meeting. The Austin Affordable Housing PFC.
Recording in progress.
The South Congress PFC Board of Directors meeting and the Austin Affordable Contractors PFC Board of Directors meeting, as well as the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Board of Directors meeting. Mr. Gerber, will you call the row?
Commissioner Bailey.
Here.
Commissioner Duncan Hall.
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo.
Present.
Commissioner Carrington. Chairman Ritchie.
Present. We have a quorum, so we're officially called to order at 12:11 p.m. on Thursday, October 17th. So we have a quorum. At this time, I'd ask Commissioner Apostolo to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next item is citizens' communication. Is anyone signed up to speak? There being none. And then the next one, let's go to item number four, presentation, discussion, possible action regarding resolution number 2865, approval of the Pathways Asset Management, Inc. property budgets for calendar year 2025. And we have Mr. Michael Roth with us and Lilani.
And I would just interject. Thank you for letting us go down to item number four. We've had an emergency situation at one of our properties, Meadowbrook, this morning, and Michael needs to tend to that. And so we're going to jump to the property budgets, which hopefully is not a heavy lift, but much of what you've seen in the past presenting itself this year. But Michael.
Yes. Good afternoon, commissioners, staff, and guests. Thank you for the opportunity to be here before you. I want to start out, before we jump into the budgets, by just acknowledging that the budgets that you've passed over the last couple of years, as we've gone through RAD transitions and transitions related to inspection protocols and other HUD changes and rules, have borne fruit. And it's been a tremendously successful year so far, 2024, at our properties. And I just want to share a couple highlights of that. You know, first is just the opportunity for a lot of staff growth as positions opened up that don't necessarily always get to open up. My taking on the role of the vice president of the department has opened up other positions with a new director, new community directors, and allowing that natural movement upwards of staff. It's been one of the great things about our department and our agency. You know, I'm someone who's been here 17 years and started out in the disaster housing program and made it all the way to this position. And seeing others having that opportunity has been a wonderful thing. But we're also seeing that the things like INSPIRE, the new inspection protocol, which is something that I think a lot of people had a lot of concerns about. Now that we're through the first several inspections, I think we're recognizing that we're learning this and we're getting this down. I want to share with you some of those results. With TDHCA, the state of Texas, we've had 5 inspections under the INSPIRE protocol so far this year. And we've had scores of, you know, North Loop scoring a 98. Menchaca Village scoring a 100. Shadow Bend scoring a 99. And a Georgian scoring a 99. And, North Gate scoring a 93 in one of those, just one single item knocked 6 points off. Otherwise, they would have had a 99. And we've had now HUD inspections at Lakeside scoring a 91, at Chalmers East scoring a 97. We had a Goodrich inspection yesterday. We expect to be in the 90s. Don't have that result back yet. And we also had Chalmers South have the TDHCA inspection scoring also a 97. So we're seeing that staff are learning and taking on these challenges successfully.
That deserves a round of applause. Those are congratulations.
And so as we come into the budget year this year, The last couple of years, the budgets that we brought forward for our properties have shown increases of, 2 years ago, it was a 6.5% increase in expenses. Last year, for this year's calendar year, it was a 13.5% increase in expenses. The impacts of COVID, impacts of inflation, and all of those things hit us very, very hard. This year, we're not doing that. The budget that's before you represents a 2% increase in expenses. And for the first time in quite some time, the increase in revenue is higher than the increase in expenses. This budget has a 3.5% increase in revenue with that 2% increase in expenses. So the challenges and of the change and the turnover of whether that's inspection protocols and new things that HUD is throwing at us, and all the turmoil from the pandemic, et cetera, we're settling down and we're getting to a place where being in this program, we're learning it, we're figuring it out, and I'm very excited about the budget we're able to bring before you here today. Having said that, when we look at the revenue overall, while the revenue has increased more, and that's a representative of just the fact that HUD gives their annual increases, and we finally are catching up on that. It always comes a year late, but it catches up to us. As we look forward into the future, 2, 3, 4 years out into the future or longer, the current system is not fully sustainable in the sense that the RAD rents, as an earlier adopter, we had low rents. And working together with many people in the agency, with Sylvia Calderon and with Mike and with Ann Gass and with many other people, we've been pushing hard on HUD to address that issue. A year and a half ago, we put in a waiver request asking for an increase to our rents. And we continue to push and continue to push and continue to hear that an answer is coming. And we have reason to believe that this time it may be true that before the end of this year, we may hear what their solution is, as the solution that's been proposed, which we don't know what it is yet, has been sent to the Office of Management and Budget at HUD to get final sign-off and approval. And if that's the case, then we are hopeful that our revenue will increase even more. None of that is reflected in the budgets before you. So all that to say is that we're hopeful that there is a solution to that problem coming up here in the not-too-distant future. I did want to highlight a couple of the expense items that in the actual report maybe look a little strange. One is the issue of insurance. You know, it looks like it says there that there's a decrease in insurance by 7.6%. I need to explain what's behind that. That 7.6% decrease is compared to what we budgeted for this year. We're always doing our insurance renewals right at this very time of year, October and November. And when we did our budget last year, we didn't have the final numbers on what insurance was going to cost. So we budgeted high, anticipating that we were going to continue to see the increases in insurance. Happy to say that that didn't happen. We got an increase, but it was nowhere near what we expected. So what we know now for going forward for next year is it will be about a 10% increase over the actual cost, but that's 7% less than what we budgeted for this year. So it looks a little misleading, but insurance does continue to go up at very high rates for us. The other line item that maybe looks a little unusual was payroll. It looks like there's a very slight decrease or even level of payroll. That's really just a reflection of what I mentioned at the beginning. With the movement upwards of many staff, you had your senior staff moving up into new positions, and they're being backfilled by other staff who are now at lower rates of pay at the entry level for that position. And it works its way all the way down finally then to the assistant managers, which is where we have a few vacancies. But, you know, we're continuing to work that, and we have a process in place, and it is working well. So while it looks like that's listed as a slight decrease, everyone is still getting their merit increases, and there's no actual cut in pay. It is just a reflection of the success we've had with people moving forward and moving up. And so that's reflected in that negative number. But overall, I'm very excited to be able to share with you that this budget is a strong budget. We're finally seeing some of that gap narrow in the sense that revenue is finally higher than increase of revenue is higher than the increase in expenses. And the hope future of a HUD solution on the rents really puts us in a strong position moving forward as a department. The staff would certainly recommend and encourage approval of these budgets, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Roth? Commissioner Bailey?
Mike, tell me what kind of insurance is it? Property and casualty that you're talking about?
Correct. Correct, our property insurance. When we look back over the last 5 years, what we're paying this year, if we're going to 2025, is almost 60% higher than what we were paying for that in 2020.
And what all kinds of covers, what things are you worrying about that we're going to have to deal with?
Well, I think we're always looking forward to manage change. You know, Inspire was one of those things that was a big concern. And so we spent a lot of time preparing for it, training staff, getting them ready for it. And I think we've demonstrated that we've been successful in that. The next big change that's coming from HUD is the Housing Opportunities Through Modernization Act, called HOTMA. They've continued to delay this for 9 years, but now we have a date, an implementation date of July 1 of 2025. But I want to be clear about that, too. In Texas, the tax credit program, TDHCA, has already implemented it. So we are already doing it at 6 properties. So while there will be change coming with that next year, there will be challenges related to that. I think we already know what a lot of those are, and we're already preparing for those because we're already doing it at 6 of the properties. Inspire is the inspection standards. HUD, after 25 years, changed the standards of what they would inspect inside properties and inside units. And so that meant we had to change how we looked at maintenance and how we were doing that work and how we were approaching the day-to-day work as well as the preparation for any upcoming inspection. In some ways, yes. For many, many years, for 20-plus years, the focus of the HUD's inspection protocol was on curb appeal and the way the property looked on the exterior. The change with Inspire focused on the health and safety of residents. So where do residents spend time? They spend time in their apartment. They spend time in the community spaces. So it didn't change necessarily what we do. It just changed the focus of that, and allowed us to actually redirect resources to a place where I think actually is better. You know, we're putting money really where it's actually impacting residents and putting our work in areas where it's actually impacting residents in their day-to-day life.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. When I first moved to Chalmers, they were annual, the inspections, the inside of the units. Why did they stop?
So our policies remain that way. We still do regular inspections of units. HUD has always had the policy that your inspection frequency depends on how you score. If you score a 90 or higher, they won't come back for 3 years. If you score in the 80s, they'll come back every 2 years. If you score below 80, they'll come back every year. So that's why it's important to us to be hitting those 90s so we have fewer inspections.
Fewer HUD inspections, but our staff is going to continue to go into units doing inspections to make sure that units are being maintained well.
Yeah.
So we continue to do our inspections, and we do those twice a year, more often if needed.
Yeah. The only pause that we've ever had was related to COVID.
Pandemic.
Yeah.
We're still maintaining the effort at preserving curb appeal. We want the property to look beautiful and be an asset to the community. So even though you focus on where the inspection is focused, which is inside the units, we're not missing a beat on the property as well. You know, if you travel to any HACA property, and we want to make sure that, you know, the grounds are well maintained and that things are painted and clean and cared for, and there's no graffiti and no glass or any of those types of things, and that, you know, playgrounds are painted and well tended to. So all those things continue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a, you know, congratulations, because there was a lot of concern nationally about what this new protocol would mean. It's been something that we've all been talking about, everybody's been kind of, you know, been frightened of it because it's, you know, so different from what we've known before. And really, I mean, you know, Michael Roth really steered the training and the effort to get that team up to speed on what they needed in order to get the job done well. And it's nice to see the results. I mean, to have a 50-year-old property at a score in the 90s is, you know, that's tough.
Yeah.
I would just maybe make one other observation. You know, two things. One is that I'm excited that we're starting to see some normalization in the budget. You know, we can handle, you know, a 2% increase. It's those wild swings that we've seen in the past of, you know, 7-10% and higher. So it tells us that RAD is maybe normalizing a bit. Although we still are very concerned about HUD and their subsidization, and we're waiting for that decision to come sometime this fall, we've been told. But we've been pushing hard. Sylvia has really been taking the lead in that effort through our work with, principally through CLAFA and with NARA, some to try to push HUD to make us whole on the rents, because we were an early RAD adopter. Our rents are lower, so we get less subsidy, and that's just not fair. So there's a bunch of other agencies that are also in that same camp.
How much money are we talking?
Several millions of dollars over time.
Mm-hmm.
How much on an annual basis would you say?
It
just depends on what they would.
I think the easier way to understand where our rents are at is HUD establishes what they call fair market rents for every metropolitan area. Our property rents are 47% of the fair market rent. And we have other HUD properties. One example that is literally across the street from one of our properties, also in the exact same HUD program, they get on average $500 per unit per month more in rent than we do.
So
it's quite a bit.
It has
to do with the RAD conversion and the revenue neutral approach that HUD took to it. They said that they didn't want to have any higher costs related to that, so that's what they established the rents at. They've since changed those rules with RAD subsequent years. Correct.
But we've talked to folks at the highest level. We had the deputy secretary and acting secretary visiting Chalmers last year. We spoke to her about this, and it's been an ongoing dialogue. I don't think they've gotten the clearance from, you know, there's a big budget impact, and I don't think they've gotten the clearance from the Office of Management and Budget, or they hadn't for quite some time. I think they now have it, and I think we're all waiting for something to come out, hopefully in the next several weeks. But something we can manage to, but just something to be on the lookout for. If we did not get that addressed, you know, several years down the road, we would have problems. But we feel confident that it's going to be addressed in a meaningful way, and look forward to reporting to the board once we see that. So expect to see that in the next month or two. But so I was going to say that the normalization of the budget is a good thing. You know, when it's 2% fluctuation, we can work and manage that. The second thing I was going to say was, Michael and I are both very sorry for the budget, the way it came out. The numbers are miserably small. This is the way he has to work through them on the spreadsheets. We're going to try to find a way that we can present a better spreadsheet for you all so you can get a sense of the numbers next year, but in a more fuller way. But I'm sorry you got handed pages of very, very small.
Very excited that other changes will get us there too. I mean, as we make internal changes on how we do our work, there's opportunities for us to improve that.
So let me ask you a question, Michael. I see there's a 14.8 increase for security. Do you think that's sufficient to, based on what we've seen from Meadowbrook, what you're seeing at other properties, you're seeing in terms of just sort of the general health, safety, crime within the larger community?
Yes, I think a significant portion of that increase is improvement in the quality of our cameras and improvement in some of our FOB, our entry systems, to upgrade some of those to get better quality on both of those is a significant portion of that increase. But yes, I think our properties are in a strong position with regard to that. We just recently hired a new safety coordinator, and one of her focuses is really helping us best use and maximize what we're spending our money on, using data, using input from residents, using her knowledge of property and physical spaces. How do we use the money that we have to most effectively get the goal that we want, which is safe places for our residents and staff? And the increase is there. It's an important increase, but I do feel that it is going to keep us in a good place for our properties.
Are there companies, so like big private security companies, that are beginning to specialize in housing security?
There are lots of security guard companies out there, and the range and the quality is significant. And that is one of the challenges to this work, is finding that. I think we feel pretty good about the three entities really we're working with. We're working with APD, Austin Police Department. We feel very strong about that relationship, looking to improve it as we move forward, especially with the new chief of police. But we also are working with two other security companies that have demonstrated that they are qualified and capable, and we get a lot of very good results from the work that they do.
A big part of that is having a good security manager, director, coordinator on staff. We've been lucky. Our first one was Hank Moreno, who was a retired police officer. I'm sorry to share with you all that he passed away recently after retiring from here. He moved to the coast and then had a heart attack a couple of weeks ago and died. But we miss him very much, and more on that. But Amanda Curry has stepped in. She actually worked at the San Antonio Housing Authority and has done other work in the space, and is very data driven, and I think with APD will be a great fit for us. And so using technology, using Amanda's data skills, renewing our partnership with APD under Chief, the new Chief, Chief Davis, we're excited about where we're headed. We're still going to have things that happen, and when those things happen, we have security services that we use at all of our properties when necessary, including the properties in Ron's portfolio, so we can get security out there that
quickly
night if we need to, and we have done that at different points when needed. We also have been using cameras. You've seen those camera setups that are oftentimes in parking lots or at a construction site. We have set those up at properties. That makes a statement as well to folks. And at one property, we actually had cameras up until we could get a couple of residents, folks who were not on the lease, out of the property or off the property. We kept those up. Those proved to be very, very impactful. Mm-hmm. So,
excuse me. What do we do when it kind of falls between APD and security, and it has to do with coke, cocaine, mm-hmm. not just the marijuana thing, people overdosing in somebody's front porch, and then just a constant thing. It's a daily thing at one of the properties that I'm referring to, and you call APD, they don't have the task force they used to have, the drug right. task force, remember. So this person winds up calling EMS so they can take the person away from his back porch or his front stoop.
Drug crimes are very, very difficult, and we spend a lot of time addressing those issues. And interestingly, there are problems all across the city in every type of housing. There's just a big prevalence of drugs.
Interestingly, at our senior properties, it's a significant issue as well. But Michael, anything you want to highlight? And then we should probably get back to the budget.
Yeah, exactly. Just what we continue to. I understand the frustration for residents about the lack of response sometimes from the Austin Police Department, but it is extremely important that they continue making those reports, because there needs to be a paper trail for what has happened for us to be able to, because we operate from a lease enforcement perspective. And if I can't prove something, I can't enforce the lease. And so that paper trail becomes extremely important. And I would just encourage anyone experiencing that to continue going down that road.
I have another question then. I have this resident who videos. He's videotaped because he lives across from where they store the bikes. People with a crowbar opening the door, stealing the bikes. He takes pictures, a video, the whole thing, and has sent it to the management, and nothing's done. Or he takes pictures of people doing drug deals in front of his door, because he's got a camera above the door, too, mm-hmm. one in the back. He's got cameras all over the place, his own.
Yeah.
And who do you show those to? Where do we get, where does he get the help?
Is this a Chalmers?
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah. I would say let's work offline with Michael, yeah. and we can make sure that those tapes are reviewed. And where there's something that's actionable for management, we can get our management partners to do something there.
Yeah.
If it's at a property that's managed by HACA, we can work with Amanda and others to see what avenues we can pursue. We can't make APD take the action, and we don't have the ability to arrest, but if we see behaviors, we can call them out as lease violations, and then we can proceed with an eviction approach, and we do that quite a bit.
So this president, you talk to Michael?
Yes.
We'll touch base. Get connected and make sure management Chalmers.
Sends me the video sometimes, and it's like.
Yeah, they can work through Michael, or Michael can work through the community director.
Okay.
Yes, they'll have a direct link. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioners, would there be any more questions related to the budget itself? If not, I would suggest staff would request a motion to approve the budget, and thank you for your collaboration.
I move approval.
Second. Second, I move to approve, and Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion, commissioners? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion passes. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. We'll let you get off. Commissioners, I believe that we have a member of the public who's come back for wanting to make public comment, and we go back to public communication. Ms. Joseph, would you like to come forward? And you have 3 minutes to address the board. Nice to see you.
They're all different. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Zenobia Joseph. My comments are in the context of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits discrimination based on race, color, or national origin. I'm here to respectfully request that you put a moratorium on those Belvoron deals and to also assist me in moving into the bridge at Heritage Woods. I want you to understand that these deals are not helping teachers. As Mr. Colwell usually tells you, a teacher has to work 30 years in AISD to earn $70,000. When I went last Friday to the property, I asked about the deals. Specifically, you just heard about fair market rate. I got a spreadsheet, which I have and will gladly share. The fair market rate for a 669 square foot unit is $1,819. And because they're charging $1,405 for the unit, it is considered discounted. So the only discount is 2%, which is approximately $28. I want you to understand that you then have to earn 2.5 times the rent in order to qualify to move into the property. I have been housed for 20 years at one property, Hilltop Residential, and experienced a retaliatory eviction, which lasted 3 years on appeal. I want you to understand that my reason for wanting to move there is I'm a teacher by trade, and I could work literally in the next block at Not Your Ordinary School. I want you to understand as well It is approximately $57,000 or so that Del Valle actually pays their teachers. So when you hear Mr. Koval tell you specifically that it's going to help the people who work at the pizza place or the teachers, that's just inaccurate. And I do recognize that you extended your discounts to 120% area median income, but I would just ask you to recognize that African Americans are over six times more likely than their white counterparts to be homeless in Austin. And specifically, that's in the ECHO July 1st, 2022 report. I tell you all of that to say that I am much like, it's hard to believe, but there are professionals who are actually unhoused. And I'll lastly close with this story. I filed a motion for disbursement to get the last of the supersedious bond from the court registry, 1353. And the case before mine was from a black couple. The lady said that she earned six figures and they were behind $15,000 in rent. And so I just want you to recognize that, unfortunately, the people who are chronically homeless are the ones that get privileged. And I will continue to work with the legislature. I testified 2 days ago on their homeless interim charge. This is just the way that life is, unfortunately, in Austin. And I would just ask you to recognize that when you do these lease audits, you accept people who earn 30% area median income, 60% area median income, and you do not ask how they get their money or how they moved into the property when it was at market rate. And I would ask you that when you allow people to move into these properties, that you take that in consideration as well and to be equitable in the people that you allow to live at your properties. If you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them at this time.
Yeah, I got some questions. It's one of my pet peeves, putting homeless people in front of folks that have been on the line for a long time waiting for jobs. I mean, waiting for housing. Is that what you're talking about?
Thank you, Chair Bailey. I'm working, and many people are, but I did the homeless management information system intake with the VA. I'm a former military intelligence officer. And one of the things that I realized was that I wasn't homeless enough. I hadn't been in the woods and I hadn't been under a bridge or any of those things. And those people are the ones that actually benefit. Right now, the city of Austin is spending approximately $35,000 on rapid rehousing. If you're housed, it's approximately $5,000 that they'll give you. But if you're in a predicament like me, you're just not prioritized at all. Working, trying to struggle through, and then if you have a friend or a family member that takes a person in, then their lease becomes jeopardized. So that's one of the things that I've asked the legislature to take a look at so that you're not then putting more people on the streets. But thank you.
I think Ms. Joseph makes a really important point about how we approach homelessness and coordinated entry. Those folks who, when you go through the coordinated entry system, you get a score, and it's based off of, you know, how long have you been homeless, you know, what zip code are you in. It looks at a variety of different sort of factors, and you know, if you get a 7 or an 8, which a lot of people do, you're at the back of the list. They're looking at the people who are deeply chronically homeless, who have been for years and are in the most challenged situations. And they prioritize those with 14, 15, 16 score, and they overspend time there instead of being able to. They could help an awful lot of people who have a 7 score, but they spend 80% of their time on those 13, 14, 15 scores, and that's been a real beef about how that system works, because it does leave people out. You're spot on.
Well, that's not, of course, that's goes past what my problem is. My problem is you don't even get to the homeless if you got people waiting to get into, you don't give them a preference over people who have been waiting for a long time. You know, we've yeah, discussed okay. this.
Gentlemen, could I ask you both to speak up louder and more into the mic?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sitting right next to you. I can hear you.
That's what my wife says all the time.
Okay, well, she's right.
Yeah, I know. But this isn't the time or place to go into that. I just was interested to hear what she had to say.
Well, I appreciate your comments, and I know you were interested in Heritage Woods, and I know that Mr. Kowal and Ms. Joseph have been in touch, and an outreach was made to you. We don't manage that property, but we
I know, did ask the management company to meet with you and follow their tenant selection criteria and to try to work with you. And so I'd be glad to make that outreach again.
Sure, and I want to acknowledge Mr. Cowell did write me back. I think the problem is that, well, one, he didn't give me a specific person, so the individual just gave me the generic sheet that showed the area median income and then all of the fees that are associated with the property. So there was no discount or any type of discussion. And I don't mean to be long-winded. I know it's not an agenda item, but it is germane to number three. I would just say that you would think one of the problems would be getting someone to help you get into the property, but I actually have a nonprofit that will pay the first month's rent. So that's not even the barrier. The barrier is if you don't earn $70,000, which teachers don't. If I stayed in the classroom for 30 years, I still would hardly have enough money to move into the property. But if you don't have that income, then you're already, it's source of income discrimination. It may be unintentional, but that is what it equates to. That is what I'm told. And so there was no leeway, if you will. So I would just ask you to look internally at your policy where you're doing the lease audit, and it's acceptable for you to take in people who are earning 30% area median income or 60% when you do the lease audit and say, oh, the property is 98% occupied, which this one was October 20th, 2022, when you did the acquisition deal. I just would say specifically that if you're going to accept those people as part of the criteria when you're doing the lease audit before you actually acquire the property, this one was $91 million, that it would be equitable to actually take a look at the individuals who are applying to be at that site. Otherwise, you're, I hate to say it, but you're predominantly focusing on white individuals. If black people are over six times more likely to be homeless, and the study shows they earn about $42,000, then they'll never live in any of these Belveron properties. Because that's what the acquisition, the 10% that I know that Madam Chair over here actually doesn't care much for, that's, you're excluding them. So it's an exclusionary practice. It may be an unintentional consequence, but for me, that would be the exception. I have the VA, I have counselors, so we have a little bit more leeway, but they use the Section 8 list, and they did offer transitional housing, but that's 2 hours away by bus, so that's really not an option. And if it happened to me and I'm educated and I'm involved and engaged and I testify, I know that, that it, the data that they're telling you about people being homeless who are African-American is real because of the income is all I'm saying. So I would just ask you to, there's always an exception to policy, and I would just ask you to use it for me so that I could actually, and you can justify it based on those lease audits that you do.
So Ms. Joseph, because this item isn't actually on the agenda, I know you know Kelly Crawford. Make sure Kelly has your phone number. I'd like to get with you. I'll give you a call. Ron's not here this week, but he and I will, he's not necessarily out on business, but he and I will call you next week with Kelly, and we'll see what we can do to try to better understand this and to see how we can help. Okay?
Certainly. And I'll listen to item number three, and if it's germane, I can just say anything that pops up that I haven't said. But
no,
thank
ma'am,
you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Certainly. Thank you. You're welcome.
Commissioners, I think we will turn on number three, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we need to go back to the citywide.
Oh, we do. I'm sorry. And Lupe is out this morning, yes, early, but Leilani is going to present. Oh, do you want to, or Commissioner, either one.
John, what do you want? I'll do it. Okay. I'll provide the highlights. All right. Reading of the Citywide Advisory Board meeting minutes for the HACA Board, October 8th, 2024, at 10:30 a.m. Call to order, Lupe Garcia, Citywide Advisory Board President and President of Santa Rita, called the meeting to order at 10:32 a.m. Michael Gerber, President and CEO, thanked everyone who attended the grand opening of Chalmers. We received positive feedback from HUD, the mayor, council members, community partners, residents, and families who all enjoyed the event last Friday. And congratulations to the resident leaders for a very successful national night out. Sad news about Hank Moreno's passing. Please keep his family in your thoughts and prayers. Michael Roth, vice president of PAMI, announced that Rent Cafe is now available at all of our HACA properties to pay rent online and submit work orders. Austin Pathways updates, Leilani Limbiega, Senior Director of Community Development, announced the importance of voting for the presidential and mayoral elections, but also voting for your next resident council officers. HACA offices will be closed on Monday, October 14th, in observance of Indigenous Peoples Day. Catherine Crago at Digital Inclusion announced that Google Fiber is now at Lakeside, and we are hosting Rent Cafe office hours on properties to assist with enrollment and adoption of our Rent Cafe online payments. Daniel Ruiz from Homeownership announced that we have five families pre-qualify for the Prospect Heights at Rosewood Homeownership Program. Meeting adjourned. Veronica Castillo Perez, President of Chalmers, made a motion to adjourn the meeting. Ricardo Medrano, President of North Loop, seconded the motion, and the meeting adjourned at 11:41 a.m. Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions? If not, then we'll go to the next item, which is the consent agenda.
Commissioners, the only item on the consent agenda is the board minute summary for the meeting held on September 19th, 2024. Is there a motion to approve?
I so move.
Apostolo moves.
Second.
Duncan Hall seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion's approved. We'll now switch over to item number three under action items and a presentation and discussion of the independent auditor's report for the fiscal year ending March 31st, 2024. Barbara Chen, as in her role as our CFO, will welcome our internal auditor, Lorraine Prey.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, and Mr. Gerber and the staff. The audit has been completed, and that you have seen the draft and audit report, including the board package. And our auditor, the GS Laura, is here to present fiscal year 2024 audit financial report for you, for your acceptance.
Thank you all. Happy to be here. Nice to see all you again. What I have is a presentation that's really highlighting the key points of the audit. I'm happy to answer any additional questions that you all have. So a couple of overview items. This audit covers the 12 months ended March 31st, 2024. Our audit covers the financials themselves as well as tests of controls and compliance. Even though you have multiple programs and multiple entities, all of that is combined and we issue one opinion. So it's considered one opinion unit. And, of course, there are additional HUD and REAC requirements that we complete as part of our audit as well. This is just a little bit of information for you all on the various requirements that your staff, the audit, the financial statements, and us as your auditors have to be in compliance with. And to summarize this, you're subject to basic accounting standards that you have to be in compliance with, governmental. You're also subject to standard auditing requirements. Because you are a government organization, there are additional government auditing standards that your audit has to be in compliance with. Because you receive more than $750,000 of federal awards, you are subject to the Uniform Guidance, formerly known as the Single Audit Act. So that's us evaluating your major programs. And then because the majority of your funding is coming from the Department of HUD, they have REAC, Real Estate Assessment Center, that we must comply with and submit to. So your opinions and reports, we issue three reports as part of your audit. The first is your standard audit report, and this is what you would see in any type of organization, governmental, not-for-profit, for-profit, that attests to the financial statements themselves. As I mentioned, there is also a government auditing standard report that we include, and this is additional, and it's really focusing on the utilization of the funds. These are taxpayer dollars, so we're looking at waste and abuse, and are items reasonable and necessary for the organization. And then the last report is that Uniform Guidance report, which is an opinion on the compliance over your major programs. So what I have on the next couple of slides are the most important paragraphs from each of those reports. All of those reports are about 3 to 4 pages themselves. So your auditor's report, our opinion, is an unmodified, that's a clean opinion, and that opinion states that your financial statements are presented fairly in all material respects. So that is the opinion that you are looking for. The government auditing report is a little different in that we don't actually issue an opinion. We just state the results of our testing, and this is also what I would consider a clean report. We did not identify any internal control or compliance issues in accordance with government auditing standards that we needed to include in our financial statements. And then the last report is another opinion, and this is our opinion on your compliance over your major federal programs. And this is also an unmodified, clean opinion. And that just says that the authority complied in all material respects with the compliance requirements that are deemed direct and material. And also, in addition, we would report if we had any internal control items, just like we did on the government auditing report, and we did not. All right, so that's the most important part. A couple of items. Your financial statements are lengthy. Just to point you to some key areas that I would focus on for you, the management discussion and analysis is really the executive summary of the financial statements. It's comparative. It explains what happened during the year. That's at the beginning of your financial statements. Your schedule of expenditures of federal awards, that just shows where all of the different federal funding is coming from. And then there's a nice one-page summary that summarizes all of those opinions that I just went over. It's called the Schedule of Findings. Even if you don't have findings, that's just what it is referred to. Excuse me. On the left is just where you can find those items. You can see the couple of reports are highlighted. The MD&A is at the beginning. And then the Schedule of Expenditures of Federal Awards is towards the end. And that's actually what is shown on the right-hand side is the summary of the schedule of findings and question cost. Basically, it just says what I just told you, unmodified opinions, no findings, no issues. And it does note that this year, just like every year, your housing voucher cluster is the major program that we test for compliance. Some required communication that I have as the auditor to go over with you as the board members. There was a new accounting policy that was implemented this year. It didn't have a significant impact on your financial statements, but it was just an evaluation of how we recognize your subscription-based items, so really your software. In the future, there is a new policy coming out next year for compensated absences. We're not anticipating that to have a significant impact on the financial statements either, but it's just something to be aware of. I'm very happy to let everyone know that, once again, we didn't have any disagreements with management. We didn't have any difficulties during our audit process. You know, we obviously work with the finance team significantly. We work with the HCB department, HR. We really interact with a lot of people across the organization. And everyone's very engaged in the process, very forthcoming with information, and supportive of that process. And also want to point out that we did not find any material adjustments or reclassifications that we found as a result of our audit procedures that were indicative of incorrect management or poor financial management. I like to point that out especially because these numbers are as of March 31st. You're getting more up-to-date information at these meetings, and you can have confidence that the auditors aren't going to come in and start making a lot of adjustments to the numbers that you've seen all year. So the numbers that you're using to make management decisions all throughout the year are good and accurate numbers. There's a couple of estimates that are built into your financial statements, some allowances, the life that you're depreciating your assets over. The important thing to note here is that there was no change in how those estimates were established. All right, and then moving into some of the financial highlights. This is a statement that you'll find in your management discussion and analysis, and it's a summarized version of your statement of net position, and it, again, is comparative, as I mentioned. Your financial statements are single year, but in the MD&A, they are comparative. So I really just wanted to focus on the more significant fluctuations. The largest one right at the top is that fluctuation in cash and investments, so an increase of close to $19 million on that. I do have another slide where we will go into that, but there was there were some increases in revenue. There was some distributions that were received from your investment in joint ventures. A variety of things went into that change. Your capital assets also went up by about $37 million. A lot of that is related to some land purchases that were made, and there are coordinating ground leases associated with those land purchases. So that's directly related to, in the middle of the page, that non-current liability increase. Most of those ground leases, you receive those funds in advance, so you have an unearned revenue that's directly related to those ground leases. Also, in your fixed asset additions, you did have some significant, you know, building and improvements and other standard additions every year. Your other non-current assets, that is largely made up of your investment in joint venture, and there's a variety of activity in those accounts this year, just like there is in most years, culminating in a net decrease. There was some significant distributions, which a distribution is going to be cash into the organization, but it's going to be a decrease in the value of that investment in joint venture. So it's, you're seeing that decrease, and then you're seeing that increase in the cash offsetting it. Also wanted to point out that your restricted net position down at the bottom, so you have close to $30 million of restricted net position. That is down from the prior year, and that's really related to decreases in the required restrictions related to modernization and development and different activities there. The other thing that I wanted to point out is that unrestricted net position right below it of $32 million. I just want to be very clear that unrestricted on your financial statements is a GAAP definition, which is different than HUD's definition of unrestricted. So any funds in any program are restricted to that program, but that could be different when we bring it up to the face of the financial statement. So I just like to point that out so that people understand that that doesn't mean that you're, that those items are truly unrestricted. They're still restricted for that initial HUD purpose of those funds. All right. We have your change in net position. Again, this is a summarized statement that you can find in the MD&A. The changes here I want to highlight are the increase in your HUD funding of $13 million, significantly related to, again, that increase in your housing voucher cluster. You also have an increase in your PBCA revenue, which is related to SHCC. And then you have a decrease in your other revenue. A lot of this, again, is related to some of that activity that I talked about in the investment in joint venture. The various activities that occur with those joint ventures are netted. There's distributions, there's contributions, and then there's the actual income that you have earned for the year. That is down this year, $24 million. On the expense side of things, there's a decrease in your administrative expenses related to some decreases in management fees, and then a large increase in your housing assistant payment, which is to be expected with the increase in the funding and the revenue that's received as well. This is just a little bit more information on what makes up all of that restricted net position. You can see almost all of it is related to modernization and development restrictions, a little bit related to some reserves and FSS and mainstream reserves as well. And here's that additional slide on the cash and investment changes. So an increase of $18 million. There were some initial investment purchases that were made this year of $9 million, which resulted in an increase in your interest income, up about $3 million. I've mentioned those distributions from the investment in joint ventures. You did also have some contributions to those investments. Purchases of capital assets are obviously correlating to a decrease in the cash, and then just overall increase in your cash from operations is really what makes up all of that activity that leads to that overall increase in cash and investments. And this, yes, sir.
You have that on the slide.
Yes, sir.
So that 1.2 million to 4.1 million, that's the interest income increase?
Yes.
That's the investment program that Barbara's been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a new change that Barbara made this year to get a little bit more benefit out of the cash that you're holding.
Yeah, we like that.
Yes. All right. And here you can see your schedule of expenditures of federal awards. This is comparative. We just do this for this presentation. You won't actually find this exact statement in your financial statements. It's just a single year. Really just wanted to point out here that of your $94 million in total federal awards, almost $90 million of that is in the Housing Voucher Cluster program. And we've already talked about that increase. The other thing I wanted to just point out here is that that schedule I just showed you does not include the funding related to SHCC, so that for performance-based contract administrator. They receive a separate audit. They receive a separate compliance audit that reports all of that. So we disclose that that is activity of the authority, but we don't include it actually in their federal awards. It's included in SHCC separately. And then very similarly, the Section 8 housing assistance payments that are reported in Austin Affordable as well. They're not included on here in addition. All right. I have a couple performance ratios. These are some ratios that HUD established quite a few years ago. They really established them largely when they were trying to find a way to evaluate public housing programs. But they're good ratios. It's something good to look at. The first is your quick ratio, and this is, of course, just measuring your liquidity or solvency of an agency. So it's comparing your assets to your liabilities. HUD's goal is a goal of 2.0 or greater. You are significantly over that. So you are at a 15 current ratio. So you can see there's the last few years trends increasing. So very strong, healthy position for the authority to really be able to maximize opportunities as they're presented to the organization. Not a lot of liabilities outstanding, you can see as well. The next one is your month's expendable net asset ratio, referred to as MENAR. And this is really just the ability for the agency to cover, to have adequate operating reserves. So how many months of operations can the agency support without receiving additional funds, not including HAP expenses? So just your operations other than that. HUD's goal here is four months or more. Again, the last few years, the agency has been steadily increasing, and they are at 21. So another indicator of strong, healthy activity for the organization. All right. Yes, sir.
Because that question comes up periodically. So we would be able to sustain, that number includes all of our RAD assets.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything except for rental assistance programs. But
right.
It does include the rental assistance payments, but it does include the admin fee to pay those staff that work.
Correct.
In Section 8.
Yes.
In voucher programs. Does that make sense? So we can sustain all the staff,
right,
and we can sustain all of the programs except for the rent payment to the landlord,
mm-hmm,
through leases programs,
right,
for 21 months.
Yes, which is a phenomenal number. This is the law.
Yes, highest in the nation.
I can't speak to the nation off the top of my head. I can speak to clients that I have looked at this for recently, and it is definitely the largest that I have seen in the past few months of looking at that. So, yes, ma'am. Last slide. This is really just a synopsis of everything I went over. So happy to report that there were no findings this year. Just continued activity in AHCC with those investments and joint ventures. Large increase in your net position for the year, up $11 million. New investment activity we talked about. Your federal funds, excluding SHCC and AAHCC, I'm sorry, just one C there, $94 million, and large improvement on those HUD ratios that we just talked about. Just a side note, I just want to say, you know, we work with a lot of people, as I mentioned, as part of this organization, and the information, the accuracy, the dedication that the team here shows is amazing. And it's not easy to have no findings in an audit. There's a lot of factors that go into that: training, staffing, you know, factors outside of your control as well. And so to have an agency that's able to continue that, especially these past few years, a lot of agencies have experienced a lot of staff turnover. So to be able to maintain that level of consistency and accuracy that the organization has, I just want to, you know, publicly say, you know, thank you to everyone working as hard as they do, and kudos to the team here at HACA, because it's great work that you're doing, and it's hard to have those types of results. So. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Any questions for me or anything else?
Just an accounting question on restricted reserves. What happens to the interest in that?
So it's going to depend on where it is, and I don't know off the top of my head where those majority of those investments are held, but it's that income is still going to be restricted into that program that originally created that interest income. So if it's in one of the federal programs, it'd be restricted there. If it's in like your business activities or maybe in your blended components, there'd be a little bit more or a little less restrictions related to it.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Commissioners, before the before this meeting, Commissioner Duncan Hall was able to join in for a couple of minutes. We had a pre-meeting, as we always do, with the Berman Hopkins team to ask for, you know, other management information behind the numbers. Because while the audit report is always, it's great. It's a wonderful audit report. There's always things that we can be thinking about to sort of sharpen the saw. And so areas that we talked about are improving some systems for making sure that we're able to let the auditors access Laserfish for certain aspects of our procurement. So we'll be working on that this coming year. We talked about administrative expenses. We talked about travel and just thinking about how we, you know, can come more in line. Last year was really kind of our first full year post-pandemic. In the next year, you know, one of the things that Ms. Calderon and I will be working on is figuring out how, as an executive team, we can, you know, tighten up and come a little bit more into conformity with industry standards. So we'll be working, you know, on that. We'll also be working on the transition. The program that's going to get audited every time is the housing voucher cluster that they call it. And it's a big cluster of programs. It's a lot of programs and a lot of dollars. And so it'll always be audited because it's our top dollar program, except for SHCC, which is a different, also gets audited, but has a different kind of risk profile. So all that said, as we go through the transition from Lisa to Laura, and as we go through the transition in admissions from Laura Bodai to Ridley Miller, those will be things we'll be working with our audit team to make sure we don't miss a beat. But, you know, transitions, admin, travel, procurement, those are, you know, ongoing things. So I just wanted you to know that there are some management issues that we're working on, or we try to be really transparent about all that stuff. And, you know, but I'm glad the audit that goes to HUD is a great one.
Yes.
But there are some things to work on, so we'll be working on those in the coming year. Anything you want to say about that, about those?
No, I think you covered it. I mean, it's HACA is a great organization, and really our feedback is to just try to keep you guys, you know, staying in that position and really just functioning in the best way possible. So it's, I wouldn't even use the word issues. I would, you know, just say it's opportunities to just be mindful of and pay attention to, because anytime you have transitions or any of those things, it's just something to, you know, pay a little bit extra attention to, which I know the team here is doing.
And the other thing I would note is that, commissioners, you all have asked over the years, you know, how do you, we've used Berman Hopkins, you know, we had Brian Nemeroff as our audit partner, then we switched out, and there's a wall between Brian and Laura Ann in our audit. And Laura Ann, you've now been our auditor for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. You're getting ready to go through basically an audit of the auditors.
Yes.
That ensures kind of the integrity of the audits, which I think is really important to this board.
Yeah, and so we do that. That is my whole firm is subject to that. So I'm just one department of our firm. We audit construction companies and manufacturing companies as well. So we go through that. It's a 3-year cycle is what the industry requires. So ours is in a couple weeks. But then even on top of that, I don't think I mentioned this to you, Mike. HUD and Quad, they actually have some oversight that they do as well. There's not really a set schedule for it. They just kind of evaluate the audit firms that are out there. And we actually went through that earlier this year, over the summer. And they pick a multifamily, you know, job, the job that has a HUD loan, and then they pick a housing authority or two, and they come in and they look at our work and make sure that we're as auditors in a very specialized industry doing the things that we need to be doing, and that, you know, we're producing audits that they can rely on. So I'm happy to report. I don't have the official report on that one, but I did get the draft, and that's a pass as well for that HUD-specific review that we had to go through. And luckily, I don't think we'll have to go through that for another few years. They have a pretty long rotation on that. But
so even though I don't think it's required, I think it's probably not a bad idea to do a quick motion from the board acknowledging receipt of the audit and accepting the audit on behalf of the board.
I don't think you can accept it.
Commissioner Apostola moves. Yeah. Commissioner Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the audit's accepted. Yes. By the board. Thanks, Lorraine. Safe travels back to Florida.
Thank you.
By the way, I didn't ask, is everybody in your world okay from the storms?
Yes. Yeah, thank you for on the east coast of Florida. The west coast of Florida the last few weeks has had it a little rough with hurricanes. I didn't have power for 5 days, but that's all you have to complain about with the hurricane, and you really don't have it that bad. So we were all good. So
did you have backup power?
We have a generator, yeah. So it was kind of like glamping. You know, you feel a little out of sorts in your own home, but you know, we didn't lose any food and
thanks.
Thank
safe
you.
Travels.
Bye-bye.
So, commissioners, we'll go back up to item number two, which is discussion and possible action on resolution number 2864 by the Board of Commissioners to take the following actions with regard to Bridge at Saffron. Do we need to do this first on the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda? Typically we do. Okay. So we'll go to the AAHC agenda. And in Commissioner Carrington's absence, Commissioner Ritchie will serve as chair. The board's been called to order. There's been a certification of the quorum. Is there any citizens' communication? Seeing none. The consent agenda includes one item, which is the approval of the board minutes for the board meeting held on September 19th, 2024. Is there a motion to approve the board minutes?
I move approval.
Duncan Hall moves approval. Apostola seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye, but a comment.
Yeah, I think before the vote, I'll tell you to comment. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I appreciate the data that they included in the minutes. I appreciate the data that they included in the minutes that I asked for, and that was providing the number of units that met various area medium income levels. And that's on the second page of the minutes, or page 3 or 4, pardon me. And I find this very useful, and I think it makes it much more transparent as we go through the minutes and look at this. And they have done also, I guess I should thank Suzanne for this and a couple of the agenda items as well. So showing really the breakdown of the number of units and the amount of income it takes to be able to rent one of those units, which is exactly what our speaker was talking to earlier. I find that very useful, and I appreciate that. If I would love to see the continuation of that.
We'll continue to add that.
Okay.
Any further discussion on that?
I was just going to say, because generally when you think about renting, and obviously you hadn't been in the rental market for a very long time, but the average is about three times whatever the unit is.
Yeah, well, that's the rule of thumb, isn't it? Yeah. And that's why I really empathize with what she was saying, because I've been there, and as a teacher, and I know what that's like, and what one can afford and what one can't afford. But we've reached that point here in the Austin area, I think, many years ago, and it's still a serious challenge. And I'd like to have more conversations about that as well.
Commissioners, all in favor of approving the board minutes meeting held on September 19th, 2024?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the board minutes are approved. First action item is item number two, which is discussion, and possible action on resolution 259 by the Board of Directors of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation appointing and or ratifying officers. And Suzanne is filling in very ably for Ron, so we'll get through this much faster in Suzanne's presence. Go ahead and take it away, Suzanne, because this will be a thing for not just this item, but for several other items that you'll see. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is just to give me signing authority so that when Ron is out, and I've run into cases sometimes Ron, Barbara, and Mike are all out, and I don't have anybody to sign, so I have to wait till they get back. And with the amount of closings and draws and stuff we have to do, it just helps that the workflow flows better. And I would just be signing, you know, when Ron's not available.
Well, I find this long overdue, and I'm glad to see it as an agenda item.
Thank you,
Mike. From a management standpoint, do you have any problems with it?
No, we actually, I support it. If I didn't, it wouldn't be on here. We've hit some issues just at different points, given the flow of documents, and a closing can take, you know, several days, and just sometimes we just need an additional signatory here, and Suzanne knows this even better than I do, and Ron does oftentimes, so it's long overdue.
I have one. Is everybody comfortable? Because my arms are frozen right now.
It is a little chilly. I have been frozen for the last hour.
We'll see if we can turn the heat down. Turn the heat up.
Air down.
Not
a day we really need any air conditioning.
You get stuffy in here. So we would ask for your approval and a motion to approve item number two, resolution 259.
I so move.
Apostolo second. Moves. Commissioner Bailey seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Item number three on the AHC agenda is presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution 260 by the Board of Directors of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation authorizing AHC to execute any and all documents or take other action that's necessary or desirable to facilitate the construction and operation of the bridge at Saffron, which will consist of multifamily housing units and associated amenities to be located on land in Austin, Texas, to be ground leased from HACA. Two, to cause AHC subsidiary limited partnership to own the development, and three, cause the owner to enter into financing for the construction of the development, and four, cause AHC or the owner and or the owner to execute any further documentation necessary or desirable to allow for the consummation of the transactions described herein. Ms. Schwerner.
Thank you.
I'm excited to present this project. It's a new construction project, so if you approved the resolutions today, then we would start construction probably within the next month or so. And once the property is complete and leased up, we will return, assuming you approve it, we will return to refinance it and get your approval to put permanent debt on this. This is a partnership with JCI Residential, or Journeyman. It would be our eighth property that we partner with them on. It is located in Austin city limits in Northwest Austin off of 13023 Hema Drive, which is right north of 183, and it's between Lakeline Boulevard and Avery Ranch Boulevard. It's right next to the new Dell Children's Medical Campus, and I'm so excited about that because I think we'll have a lot of nurses and people that would be able to live there and just walk right to work. This would be 336 units, 208 one-bedroom, one-bath, 76 two-bedroom, one-bath, and 52 two-bedroom, two-bath. It is in the Round Rock ISD. The schools are Purple Sage Elementary, Pearson Ranch Middle School, McNeil High School, and then the ACC campus is off of Cypress Creek. It's just, if you go down Lakeline Boulevard south, it may take you at the most 10 minutes. And so I think it's really good to have that there. The closest bus stop is gonna be on 183 and Lakeline Boulevard, right by that big HEB center. And then there is another one a little bit farther and right in front of, like, the Target, and then there's another one in front of the Serrano's off of Lakeline Mall. So the lender is that's doing our construction loan is Washington Federal Bank, and then JCI will have put all of the equity in. And like I said, if y'all approve it today, we will proceed to closing probably in hopefully the next 2 weeks, and then start construction shortly after. And I would love to answer any questions you have.
So what's the projected timeline for completion of construction?
Normally takes about 24 months. Yeah, and, you know, that's going to depend on what happens The Shoreman strike, you know, they delayed that.
Oh, like
the dock workers.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that hits at the beginning, it might be a little bit longer. Yeah, they're going to take it back up. Hopefully not. But we're going to be positive and say 24. 20. But we will probably, we'll be able to do it in phases so that as we get certain buildings complete, we'll be able to start leasing them a little bit before the 24 months. And I forgot to mention, just looking at the map, we closed on Bridget Avery Ranch that we partnered with Journeyman on last month. I think Ron brought it to you maybe 2 months ago. And it's right a little bit north of there. it is also a workforce housing project, and it is 94% occupied. So there's a large demand in that area. There's so much retail and the big HEB is there. There's just so much opportunity around there.
Is that the new phraseology? Workforce housing projects.
The what?
For what we're calling is mixed income, but mostly affordable.
Yeah.
Is that
what you're the affordability it? On this will be 10% at 60% AMI,
right.
40% from 70% to 80% AMI, uh-huh. which we think we're probably going to get closer to the 70s,
right.
And then the rest at a We can do market rate, but we always discount them.
Okay. All right. Given that fact, how many new construction projects have we started in the past maybe 2 to 3 years that would fall under this designation of workforce housing projects?
In the last 2 years, I've got two off of Palmer Lane North. Oh, and then my Riverside Urban East projects. There's two phases of that one. We just started the second phase. And then I think that's all the new, construction that we've done in the last 2 years that have not been tax credit.
What about the preservation, affordable preservations bill?
All of Ron's acquisition preservation ones are under that,
okay,
that model. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Zana, are we, I know we jump around because we've got to cover different things on these, mm-hmm, different nonprofits. Have we discussed resolution 02864? Is that all part of the same thing?
Yes. So 2864 is on the HUC agenda.
Yeah, we just haven't gotten back to it yet.
Correct. We'll come back to it.
All right, I'll have a question, but we'll wait till we get back to it.
Okay.
Suzanne, there's been a lot of conversation about PFCs. Can you clarify that in the context of this?
So this is not a PFC structure. The difference is on a PFC structure, the PFC would own both the dirt and the land. And then it would lease it to the partnership.
Hold on a second. You said the dirt right now, and the land?
Yeah, the dirt and the land.
The dirt and the building.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. The dirt and the buildings.
Don't want you to come forward.
I do this all the time.
Sarah Scott, sorry. Council with Coach Rose.
Good morning, or afternoon. Suzanne was saying, other than just the dirt and the land piece, the dirt in the building, she was saying that correctly. It's like,
can you speak a wee bit louder?
Sure. Can you hear me a little bit better? Yeah, so as Suzanne was saying on the PFC structure, which this is not, this is the equitable title under the Housing Authority Act 392 of the local government code, which is the same structure we use on tax credit transactions. The PFC structure does not work on tax credit transactions because the partnership has to own the buildings outright. And under the PFC structure, they're owned by the PFC and leased to the partnership. But
as Craig said, we've done relatively few PFC structures. Those have been the five NRP deals that we did at St. Andrews, South Congress, Highland Mall, and somewhere else. And those are the ones that are 50% at 80.
Yes.
Under, at that time, they were under Section
303.
Mm-hmm.
That provision of law has been dramatically changed.
Mm-hmm.
But the PFC structure of 50% 80 continues to be questioned by the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 392.
What is the issue?
They were concerned about abuse within the use of PFCs because there were entities creating these PFCs all over the place that didn't have a housing authority or a housing finance corporation serving as sort of the anchor institution.
Right.
The sponsor.
Yeah.
The sponsor.
Another key difference is on the 392 transactions, like the Saffron one Suzanne presented, the AHC owns the general partner, so they're in control of the tenant who owns the building and operates the project. Whereas on PFC transactions, there's no requirement of any ownership by an affiliate of the housing authority.
But in a way, under 392, we are sort of de facto we're the facility of making this development happen. We're the public facility making this happen.
Right.
Under 392, the land is owned by HACA, and it's ground leased to the partnership. The buildings that are built on the land are owned by the partnership, where an entity of AHC is the general partner. The general partner has signing authority, has to approve every decision that's made on that property. And that's why we like that structure better than the other one. And we take it very seriously.
So let me just restate this in my own words. So the big difference between this transaction and a PFC deal is, in the PFC deal, the structure is owned by the limited partner, as opposed to the general partner.
The developer serves as the general partner.
Okay.
So there's no AHC involvement in any decision making, except for certain things under the PFC.
But the partnership owns the property.
It leases the land and the buildings from the PFC.
And when you get to the
But the PFC is created by the public entity.
Yes.
Private parties can't go out and create a nonprofit and call themselves a PFC.
Right, they have tried.
So it has to be the city, the county, the housing authority, school district, mm-hmm. workforce development board, a kind of public nonprofit
mm-hmm.
that can create the PFC.
Right.
Okay, so then
today, but
now.
But 2 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Right.
That was what the legislature clamped down on.
There were loopholes.
The loopholes allowed, me and Sarah and Lauren and some other nice, like-minded people decided we wanted to create a public facility corporation to advance the public, our perceived view of the public interest to develop affordable housing properties. There was probably a way to do it.
Yeah, and there was no geographical tie to any given place, but that changed. And the only PFC transactions that HACA's PFCs have been a party to were under the prior law before the legislative changes went into effect.
And we did that because we saw advantageous financing and other benefits that would come from that structure within our PFC.
Right.
Right.
And we did those five deals. It was largely because we were going into some very difficult to develop areas like Highland Mall, where the ACC, Highland Mall and the ACC area, and down by St. Andrews.
And St. Andrews.
Insisting on that structure.
Yeah.
So we used that structure only when we had to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now it's not an option.
And the 392 transactions, the other thing, too, is in addition to, AHC controlling the managing general partner of the partnership that owns the actual buildings, generally HACA has a right to buy the project as part of the equitable title justifications, whereas on the PFC transactions, that generally isn't part of the business terms.
Clear as mud?
Yeah.
The good news is we've done most of our transactions have been under 392,
yes.
Which is the equitable title transaction approach for a public housing authority. That's the straight, cleanest route where we own the land, we own the buildings, and we're calling all the shots.
Yeah.
For the partner. So that's been the safest and best, and we provide extensive asset management for that approach.
Mm-hmm.
Through Rod and Suzanne and Steve and their team.
Yeah.
So and Journeyman has been a terrific partner. JCI has been a terrific partner in using that approach. We haven't used anything different with them.
Yeah, a lot of partners or a lot of people that have approached us don't like that. They don't want us to have, that control, and we pass on those because we feel that we've got to be in there because, in exchange for what we're giving them, we need to have control over the property.
And does that last for a specific number of years, or is that?
Yeah, there's a term in the ground lease, usually either 70 to 99 years.
But we're really excited, and you
showed the map of this area here. Can you go out just a little bit?
So let me just interview here for 1 second and just so in terms of talking about this, Suzanne.
Is your mic on?
Yeah. So in terms of talking about this, that component that you just talked about in terms of owning the land and the building, what I think you want to talk about in terms of the accountability. Because when you're talking to accountability.
Oh, accountability.
Because when the public says, well, you know, look, you guys are just basically going with these developers, you're giving away everything, but you have the accountability in the structure to control, to have the control to make sure that the residents who we want to serve can get served in terms of housing choice voucher holders. And then also in terms of the income levels of folks who we want to be able to rent to. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm saying this is because I'm hearing people talk about different things at the Capitol, but the one thing I do know that is this legislature coming up, they're going to be real big on the word accountability. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with anything bad we've done, but there have been some things that have happened with the two storms. Beryl happened, CenterPoint, they have to get approval to increase rates to buy different things, and the legislature feels like there hasn't been any accountability in the system. Right. Recently, the state passed a $10 billion fund to build new power plants. Some company filed an application to get millions, hundreds of millions of dollars using another company's name, and the PUC didn't catch it and should have caught it with a mere Google search, because the person who was head of the company had been convicted of fraud for doing something similar in another state. Well, actually in this state. And so the word accountability is going to come up a lot. So when you talk about this, would other folks outside of HACA talk about in terms of the accountability that we put into these projects to make sure that the folks that we're supposed to serve do get served? Mm-hmm. Okay?
Are any of these tax 9% or 4%?
No. Why would a developer,
if they're not going to get the benefit of the tax relief, why would they go into one of these?
His question is, if the developer is not getting the benefit of using a 4 or 9% tax credit, why would they want to partner with us to do a deal like this? What's the benefit to the partner?
What are they getting out of it?
Sometimes it comes down just to the simple fact that they can't get a 4% tax credit deal to pencil out. And it's easier to get the workforce housing project to pencil out. And if they've got the available equity that they want to deploy into a project, then that's kind of the benefit. And the benefit, I know with JCI, they were building a lot of market rate properties. And they really, really wanted to build, they did two tax credit properties with us. And y'all approved an inducement resolution last month, but they wanted to do more and give back to the community, and they just couldn't get some of these other ones. Like, this one would not pencil out as a tax credit deal. So that's why they asked, you know, we still want to do some affordable housing. Would y'all be interested in partnering with us on a workforce housing? So at least half of those units can be affordable. And so that's kind of, you know, it's not only a way of getting their project done, but also still being able to further their mission of affordable housing.
So you've got, and this is going to sound like a lawyer, but you've got a developer who wants to do good things for people and not worry so much about the profit. I have a hard time believing that.
Well, they're still making, you know, enough money to you know, to keep the keep their people employed and stuff, but they are still also offering something to the community. And not all of their deals are affordable housing, but they did, you know, it's like some of our other partners, they want to do affordable housing, you know, and give back. It just depends on what the mission of their company is.
So let me throw this out to you just for food for thought, Chuck. So with all these people moving to Texas every day, what's the number, 13,000, 1,300, mm-hmm. something like that? It's quite a few. But so when companies move and they bring their top management, you know, that may be 10 people, but the employees that are attracted here, they can't afford to live downtown Austin. So that's why there's a market for workforce housing.
Right.
Because they're not at that. They're not making $250,000 a year. You know, you may have five or six people who make that because they're senior management. But for the most part, you know, their workforce is making a lot less. And Texas, you know, it's a great place. But when you compare our wages compared to other states, we're still a kind of a low-wage state. So, you know, in fact, you know, right before COVID, we were all talking about all these jobs were coming. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were coming, but the income increases didn't come because of the jobs. It came because with COVID, people got money from the government. It wasn't like people were getting raises because people were complaining they couldn't keep up with the prices. Because, yeah, you brought all these folks in, you drive up the price of housing and everything else, but they're not getting 10% increases every year. Yeah. And so that's why there's a market here that's been created for those workforce. You know, they're working. They got entry-level jobs, middle-level jobs, but they're not making the big bucks.
And why are there all these condos being built downtown, which are completely unreachable for anyone who's making under $100,000 a year?
I will tell you this, that a number of projects that were on the board have not started yet. They're still on the board. What you see are projects being completed that have been started some time ago, but they're not new projects that are being started downtown because downtown has a glut of space.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And remember that condos, of course, are an ownership structure, right? It's a joint ownership structure. If you're looking at just the rental market, you're exactly right, though. The number of new units that are being built is expected to dramatically slow in the next year. So we're not seeing the new construction starts that we would expect to see. And that's going to likely, you know, weaken supply, but really see a shoot up in demand. And that's going to mean prices are going to go way up. Going back to Commissioner Bailey's point, because I believe in your point. I mean, developers doing it because he wants to make money.
Courthouse is full of developers.
Yeah, right? So they're wanting to make money. I think what has happened is that I think some developers are saying, okay, we've got an unstable market, and if we look at the market and think how can we ensure the profits we need to see, the returns we need to see to our investors, I think they're saying we can stabilize this property now, if we can get a tax exemption and serve, we can make enough serving 50% at 80 with 10% of the property being at 60%, which is what they've offered here. And we can cover ourselves. And we know that the units will get filled very, very quickly because we'll be at those affordable rents. And the $1 million a year in tax abatement or whatever it is will make that happen. Mm-hmm. I think that I think it's because of stability of the market that folks are choosing that. I think that if you're looking for deeper levels of affordability, then it's when we're bringing you projects that are using 4% bonds or 9% tax credits. Mm-hmm. Or when you see 30s, 40s, 60s, you're seeing, you know, geo bond money from the city. You're seeing other alternative sources in the capital stack. You're seeing, vouchers. All sorts of stuff. It's a bigger, more complex thing. In this case, it's just simply it's a good developer who's got a good, you know, moral compass. He's worked well with, you know, the homeless community. He's contributed to community, but at the end of the day, you know, for him,
there's a money element to it that, you know, ensures he makes what he needs to in order to cover, and he can do some community good, but he's only going to do it at those highest income levels because he's not going to piece together the rest of the capital stack to serve folks at 30 and 50 and 60. Mm-hmm. So, but it's still, because of the area that we're talking about, there's still a value in doing this. And I would just come back to the, real quick, I mean, I'm super excited about the area because the property is here, this area here. We're here at Bridge and Avery Ranch. We have another property here. We also have, this is Lakeline Mall. This is right next to the property, virtually across the street and across the field, is the Dell North Children's Medical Center right there. And then there's like the biggest YMCA in town is right up here. You know, my kids have played soccer, and it's a beautiful facility. Lakeline Mall's here, and then we have, what's it called?
Arella, Bridge at Arella.
Bridge at Arella is right here, which we own as well. And then you go out here, and there's another property we have as well. But there's a lot happening here. And, of course, this is 183, and, Tyra, you know about all the stuff happening down here. So it's a really key area, we think, to be in. It is in Williamson County. You know, and it's a McNeil High School, and it's I forgot where. The elementary school is down here on 620.
Purple Sage.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Purple Sage.
Yeah, Purple Sage. Yeah, that's off 620. And but it's a great area. But this is one of those deals that we'd be doing that's going to be serving folks at 80 mostly, and a few at 60.
Do they get any kind of bonus points for their track record in trying to provide some affordable housing, like on future deals?
Generally not. I mean, they get future points from the perspective of, you know, compliance, because they're going to have they'll be, you know, we're going to be watching them. If they, you know, screw up, then they won't be eligible for other affordable housing programs down the road. But it's a developer with a very good track record. And, you know, and you can tell, I mean, we're coming back to many of the same folks because there is a cost of setting up the compliance infrastructure to manage these properties. Mm-hmm. And not many people will invest in that. So, you know, you see the same, you know, 10, 12 players that we've chosen to work with that, frankly, get it right more often than not.
Yeah, and they've got a really good management company. JCI manages internally, and I've worked with them a lot to make sure that we are doing the affordable units correctly. And they run a tight ship.
And it's probably worth us going and, you know, we've talked about needing to go out to some of these properties and maybe do board meetings getting on a bus. It's been difficult for a number of reasons, but maybe we need to start thinking more fully about that.
All right. Well, I thought I had Susanna this time. I found I even marked some in my book, which I don't do very often. But then I got to reading it, and I thought, well, you goose, of course that's not what it means. One of our properties out there is Bridge at Avery Ranch, which closed. How come I didn't know it? We didn't keep it open.
Oh, yeah.
But you meant we closed on the property.
Closed financing,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, we closed. Yeah. You needed a comma somewhere.
And it's already 93% full. So it's been a slam dunk.
Yeah, it's brand new.
It tells you the need. It's nice when the property next door, you know, to where you're building, has got that kind of occupancy rate.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
And in fact, TDHCA looks at that. They look at, before you can build another second property, you got to, when you get tax credits, you have to do a market analysis of a 2-mile area or even larger than that to see how units are filling up, because you don't want to oversaturate an area.
Let me ask this question. This is kind of off the cuff. Does TDHCA look at us and other housing authorities around?
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time.
No, I didn't have the mic on. So my question is, essentially, does TDHCA kind of look at us just in terms of saying there are reputable organizations out there that do affordable housing that can sort of give you like a... You know, like with HUD, they give you sort of, you know, you're a high performer, but does the state in any way look at you and give you the good housekeeping seal?
They don't give public housing authorities any additional benefit. There was an effort to try to give them a sort of a black smudge, but we're at least on equal footing to any, we're on equal footing to any other deal that goes.
It's more of a property by property thing that they look at. I mean, if you've got some problems, then they look at your whole portfolio.
But they want an experienced developer, and you experience developer points, and you've got to have you got to be in compliance and on those sorts of things on their in their programs.
Yes.
So if we submit something to TDHC, they look at every other deal that we've done that has bonds or 4% that have gone through them or have touched them to make sure we're in compliance.
And I was just thinking about just looking at our list, whether it would be who us to go and just have a conversation and let them know what we have done so that when we do come and have to talk with them again in the future on a bond deal or something that, you know, they kind of already know, you know, this is someone who really has a great track record. And, you know, so you're not having to really sort of justify to fight really hard on a particular project when they know that you've got this history because you've already been there.
When we submit a tax credit application, we do have to list all of our previous tax credit properties, and we've got a long list of
I guess what I'm saying
is
you're doing that when you're having to do the transaction. I'm saying do it when you don't have the transaction because you've already built up the goodwill. So when you do it, they look at it a little differently.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the you know, we have talked to Bobby Wilkinson, and we've talked to Michael Lytle, and you know, Brooke Boston, and others on that team. You know, they know the work that we do. And, you know, Cody Campbell. I didn't see Cody at the Chalmers event, but folks, but we we invite they're out. Bobby did come to our when we did the grand opening of the property with LDG. He was there,
so
he's in presence. So he's seen some of the work we do. I think what you're rightly getting at is that. Maybe the PHAs in the state as a whole need to come together to make sure that the TDHC understands the value of what the PHAs do more fully, because if there's a bunch of new resources coming, as they're, you know, which I think both presidential candidates are talking about the need for more affordable housing, you know, maybe we get some kind of a preference in the tax credit program, or maybe we get some kind of an added benefit to help distribute some of those benefits, because we're already on the ground and we know what we're doing.
So let me ask you, how long have you been the CEO?
12 years here.
So you completed my sentence, because that's where I was going.
I mean,
that's kind of where I was going is, regardless of who wins, they're talking about housing stuff. And so I'm just thinking we ought to get in, position ourselves separate from a specific transaction. Because when you're in front of regulators and policymakers, I mean, they're human, but if they've already sort of developed a favorable disposition to you, it makes the conversation easier. Or in Chuck's business, in my business, we always try to get our clients to always be top of mind. So when they're thinking about something, they immediately start thinking about your client, and they want to call you and talk to you before they talk to everybody else. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do, is think about how do we position ourselves, because if you think about all the great stuff we're doing, I still think we're kind of just a little silo and very few people really know it.
Exactly. And that's been my point for a number of years. I mean, in the past decade, we've almost quadrupled our property holdings, haven't we? Have we not?
Oh, more than that.
Yeah. And I doubt very seriously if even one-tenth of the people who are involved in city planning and management, and either at the city level or at the Travis County level, know what we're doing. I mean, they know we have public housing units. They have no idea of the kind of stuff we've done with mixed income.
I would offer a counter narrative, respectfully. We want them to know, and I think they do know. When the eviction prevention program came, they knew who they could turn to, and they turned to us to distribute $80 million in eviction prevention dollars. When there was a deal to be done at St. John's, we're working on that now with Graystar. Mm-hmm. They turned to us. When something's complicated and involved, when there's extra resources, the city in particular, because we're an entity of the city, they've turned to us. We've had very strong partnerships with with the housing team there. We have a little bit of work to do because we have a new leadership team there with Mr. Broadnax, but I'm so glad he could come out to the Chalmers opening, and we're going to get on his calendar to go visit with him. He actually had been in Dallas, and he had a great relationship with the Dallas Housing Authority and knows what housing authorities, you know, can do. So we've had great relationships with our housing office here in Austin. And, of course, you know, we've got a great team at Travis County, and we've worked with many of the commissioners there.
I guess maybe really where I want to go with this thing is, what does the public know about us? I mean, we have done more to address the affordability housing issue than any other entity, and no one seems to know our value in terms of that.
Yeah, I can't say that we haven't, you know, kept our head down just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
I will say that there are entities around the state right now who have their heads up high and their noses in the air, and they're getting fired at. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes can hurt us. Is the activities of others who aren't as cautious and careful, and so we're working through that as an industry now with some of those actors who have not behave well. The problem is, I think you've got people at TDHCA, for example, who know the good stuff we're doing and know the good stuff that other PHAs are doing, but then you have a couple of screw-ups that are significant enough that warrants an awful lot of TDHCA's time to fix, and we can talk about that offline. But I think we've gone afield quite a bit from this item, and I would...
Which is a
great discussion. We feel very confident that this is in the right place and a good and a worthwhile project that the board would be proud to be partnered with a good partner who knows how to get the job done well for us. So we would ask for approval of resolution number 260.
I move approval.
Duncan Hall moves. Second. Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion, commissioners? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And the ayes have it. There's no need for an executive session. Is there a motion to adjourn Austin Affordable Housing Corporation?
Move.
Bailey's moves. Apostola seconds. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? And AAC is adjourned at 2:03 p.m. We'll now turn to the Austin Affordable Contractors PFC. That agenda has been called to order. Certificate of quorum has been issued. Is there any citizens' communication? Seeing none, the consent agenda is approval of the board minutes from the board meeting held on March 21st, 2024. Is there a motion? Apostolo moves. Commissioner, who seconds? Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, and the board minutes are approved. Action item number 2 is presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution 0002 by the Board of Directors of Austin Affordable Contractors PFC, appointing and or ratifying officers. This is the exact same action you took on the
8th. I move approval.
Duncan Hall moves approval.
Second.
Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed.
Where did this come from? I don't ever remember seeing this one before.
This is because
we did the minutes in March of last year.
They can't, when we did the annual meeting, at the end we approved all those minutes.
And so we created. When did we create this contractors PFC?
Years ago.
This year, it's new. We kind of want to like separate each silo of business. So this one is when we act as the general contractor on the new construction properties, so that we can pass on the sales tax exemption, which also helps, you know, with the price of constructing a property. So this is the entity we use for that business.
Yeah, and will we take the ones we've already done and move them over to this?
No, just anything that's closed from here on forward. We'll
So Duncan Hall, motion to approve. Apostola seconded. All in favor say
aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. There's no further business. Is there a motion to adjourn? Duncan Hall moves to adjourn. Apostola seconds. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And AAC... PFC is closed at 2:05. We'll now turn to the South Congress PFC. It's been called to order. Quorum's been certified. Is there any citizens' communication? Consent agenda is approving the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on March 21st, 2024. Apostolo moves to approve. Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the minutes are approved. The action item is number two, which is resolution number 18 by the Board of Directors of South Congress PFC, appointing and or ratifying officers. Same. Duncan Hall moves to approve. Apostolo seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the ayes have it. There's no further business to come before South Congress PFC. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Bailey moves to adjourn. Apostolo seconds. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the ayes have it. And South Congress PFC is adjourned at 2:06. Turning to Austin Affordable PFC, the board meeting has been called to order. Quorum has been certified. Is there any citizens' communication? The only item on the consent agenda is approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on September 19th, 2024. Apostolo moves to approve. Duncan Hall seconds.
Second.
Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the board minutes are approved. The action item is number two, which is resolution 118 by the board of directors of Austin Affordable PFC, appointing or ratifying officers. Is there a motion to approve? Apostolo moves to approve. Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the ayes have it. There's no further items to come before the board on Austin Affordable PFC. Is there a motion to adjourn? Apostolo moves to adjourn. Is there a second? Duncan Hall seconds. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it, and we're adjourned at 2:07. We'll now turn back to the original HACA agenda, and we'll turn to item number two, which is resolution number 2864, allowing the Board of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to take the following actions with regard to the bridge at Saffron in Austin, Texas, including acquisition of the site for the development, the lease of the development site to the owner of the development, and any such actions necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution.
I move approval.
Duncan Hall moves approval. Apostolo seconds. Is there any further discussion on this project? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? And it is approved by a vote 4-0. Commissioners, there's no need for an executive session. I think there are a couple of reports. Thank you, Suzanne. Thanks a ton. A couple of quick report items. Next week is a busy week. As you know, we are going to say farewell to Lisa Garcia, which is going to be hard. We're going to miss her very, very much. Laura Godai is working hard and has been on a really six-week journey to make sure that she's ready to step into that responsibility. I will tell you as well that one of Lisa's top directors, Diane Falcone, had been planning to retire. She's been with Lisa, you know, for 28, 29 years. She was planning to retire in January, even before Lisa shared with us her news. So, you know, in essence, you know, 60 years of experience is getting ready to walk out the door. It's a lot of, a hard loss. But I'm glad to tell you that both Lisa and Diane are available for assisting as we go through this transition, should we need that. Laura has stepped up and she's gone through training, extensive training. She had a lot of background as well, but she's even gone through additional training that we've had her on with Dan McKay. She's got a great team of directors and managers in her division who have really embraced her leadership, and so we don't think we will miss a beat. But, it's a big, complicated program, and I just want to be very honest with you about that. So, you know, Sylvia is going to be taking a very active lead in making sure that we have good scaffolding around that program. And as you can hear my voice, and the reason I'm briefing you all is because I'm also anxious about it myself. So it's a big program, a complex program. It's not just one program. It's, you know, multiple voucher programs. It's our outreach to the homeless. It's our family self-sufficiency program. It's our inspection programs. What else?
Landlord
outreach. it's a big public-facing program, and so we don't have a lot of room for error. So I just want you all to be assured that Sylvia and I are freaking out, so you don't have to. We're working it hard. Any questions about that transition? So next week, on Tuesday evening, I think you all are aware that we're doing a little going away, so you've all been apprised of that, and I hope you will come if you're able to. And then on Thursday, we are doing the Family Self-Sufficiency event. That'll be held at the Thompson Center at the University of Texas. So there is a lot of good parking there. But we'll work. Yes, ma'am. But we're going to talk afterwards about transportation. But it's at the Thompson Center at the University of Texas, which is just north of the LBJ School, right there at the Dean Keaton and Red River. Yeah, it's right there at that corner. It's got its own dedicated parking lot. But it's a nice facility, and that's where we're going to do the FSS luncheon. Carl and Chairman Ritchie and I have just been signing the certificates, and it's really joyful to see how many accomplishments we have a lot of FSS graduates and, completing degree programs and vocational training programs and have acquired jobs that are paying $30,000, $40,000. You saw one that was
$76,000.
Isn't that our highest thus far?
It's got to be among them.
It's
so
probably among the highest. I think there was one that was 83.
So a lot of great progress that's been made by our residents and clients. So come and celebrate that with us on Thursday if you're able to. We really would like that. We're really focusing on the residents and the clients. Oftentimes in the past we've brought in, some big name speaker, to give a talk. And this time I think we want to we've been trying, and you saw that at the scholarship luncheon, at the scholarship event, we want to hear from, our clients and students and hear their stories, because it's really important to hear their lived experience. And so we're doing that on Thursday. And so I hope you'll.
What day is
that? Next Thursday, 24th. Yep.
What time?
Uh-huh. 10 a.m. 10 a.m. for that. Yeah. And then after that, we're doing our fall social, and folks are very welcome to that. And Nydia will send details for that afternoon, from 1:30 to 4:30. Sylvia, is there anything I've missed that we want to highlight for the board? Lauren, any legal problems that I created that we should?
Not that you created,
no.
No.
I'll keep working on it.
I would maybe mention just two other quick things. One is that I'm really grateful Jorge has stepped into as our Director of Technology Management and Innovation. He has been appointed chair for the state of Texas, NARO, over the Artificial Intelligence Committee that's going to look into effective ways to utilize that technology for housing authorities to see some efficiencies. And so congratulations or sympathies, I'm not quite sure which he'll also be part. He's also part of the CIO panel that is working through CLAFA to try to address issues that the larger PhDs are confronting, not just around AI, but around technology as a whole, cybersecurity, and other things. That's all I would share. It's been a good month. There's a lot to look forward to in the month ahead, and I appreciate everyone's indulgence today. With that, we would ask for anything else for the common good?
None.
With that, we'd move to adjourn.
Second.
Duncan Hall moves to adjourn. Apostola seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. And we're done at
2:13.
Recording stopped.
Was there anyone on?
Mike, I got a call from an I manager at Jet. From somebody in Grapevine wants to talk about Eastland. Okay. Let me call and give you. I'll give you the number.